dbkmediaservices.com. Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs and Matt Combs.
Hello, SBC fans, and welcome back to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SBC Sports Talk Online Radio Show. I'm Shane Combs of SBCSportsZone.com, and certainly appreciate the fine people in there, Triple Crown Family Fun Center, and Chillicothe, so supportive of the show. And, you know Matt, as my brother Matt here joins me, as he always does throughout the fall, you know, Matt, I know some of the feedback you were giving there a couple weeks ago. I've had a couple people mention that they had a chance here in the last week or so to get in there. One family of four was able to go in there, and they were talking about some of the comments that you had there at the beginning of the show, and how they were surprised with all the improvements they'd made there. So again, certainly couldn't do this without them, and want to encourage you to go in there and check it out. It's just a great place, a good time for people of all ages. Well, Matt, as we get into the show this week, some of the feedback started with Dr. Strauch over the last couple weeks, talking field turf, talking injuries, and the one sport athlete, the three sport athletes, and that kind of got us looking ahead to this week, where we talk a little coaching, and we'll get to that here in a little bit. But certainly appreciated Dean of Sports Medicine and Dr. Strauch joining us as well, because that's really added to some of our feedback. But I guess, Matt, that we'd be crazy not to start week seven football. You know, Paint Valley Zane Trace game should be the story, and it certainly will be here on SVC Sports Talk. Obviously, a lot of fan reaction throughout the area with the Edina Huntington situation over the weekend, and certainly have had a lot of conversations. And I'll, you know, continue to talk to different people, I'm sure, just because, you know, I do run into a lot of people and talk sports. But if we're talking week seven football, or entering week seven football, I should say, I guess you have to look back at the Paint Valley Zane Trace, and that should be the story as we get in here to the second half of the season. And, you know, Matt, we go to overtime games. Zane Trace wins at 15-8, and Zane Trace jumps out 6-0 on a Joel Dunkel 12-yard TD with probably about a couple minutes to go there in the first quarter. I had the little chance to go up to get the seventh point on the board, was unable to do so. But then a minute later, the bad snap from Paint Valley results in a safety, and it's 8-0. And I couldn't help but think, as soon as that play happened, Matt, you had mentioned maybe a little miscue or some different things that could end up being the difference. And that's kind of what happened there. Weather conditions or not, those were the types of mistakes that were really going to cost you playing in a game like that.
Yeah, you know, we talked about it last week about big plays or mistakes, and it was a little difficult to have a lot of big plays the other night anywhere, you know, in the area due to the weather. You know, I think I heard Coach Gallion from Piketon saying that maybe they only threw the ball four or five times the whole night, and that's a program that usually throws it around a little bit, and the weather just had everybody sort of hemmed in. So the big plays weren't there, but the mistakes were even more so because of the weather the other night. It seemed like a lot of coaches talked about special teams mistakes anytime you had the long snap. And that's what happened to Paint Valley, I think, there. And that safety ended up being huge, because when Paint Valley eventually did score and converted the two to tie the game, they may have been faced with a situation where an extra point would have given them the lead and maybe ultimately the win. So unfortunately, when two good teams play like that, unfortunately, a lot of times it comes down to a mistake rather than a big play.
Yeah, Matt, the next thing that happens there is Dunkel, the fine quarterback of Zane Trace, leaves the game with an injury and did not return. And I guess a lot of times, you know, when I'm watching sporting events, I watch them with a coach's eye and think as a coach. And obviously in a big game like this, there's never a good time to lose your leader. But it certainly puts a challenge on the kids, on the coaches. I'm sure play calling, game plan adjustments. You know, I know you've dealt with that before. There's a big difference on losing someone with 2 or 3 days of practice compared to losing them right in the heat of battle. Kind of take us through it from a coach's perspective and how that can influence the game moving forward.
Well, when you lose somebody suddenly like that, and then that backup hasn't really had the reps, you know, to get ready, that's always tough. But give a lot of credit to that Harris kid. He stepped in and made eventually the game-winning throw to win the game. And you know, this week now, I don't know what the situation is, but if the starter is still out, you know, the backup will get more reps, get a little more you know, familiar with the playbook or whatever. But sometimes, though, at the same time, when you're the backup and you have to just run in there, you don't have time to think about it. You don't have time to get nervous about it. You just go play. Sometimes if you have to come back the following week and play, now all of a sudden you've had a week to sort of, you know, sort of let reality sink in and here's what the situation, here's my role. And sometimes, you know, people don't play as well. So you never know how the individual is going to react, I guess. But give credit to Zane Trace the other night for reacting the right way and handling that adversity and not letting it cost him the game.
Well, it did, and gives Zane Trace a lot of credit. And I think where the credit goes to Paint Valley as well, 8-0 game stays that way all the way through three quarters. Then you get late in the game. The Paint Valley offense had really struggled to find itself, to find its rhythm. Finally, Teagan gets loose for a 2-yard score, and then Anthony McFadden adds the 2-point conversion. The big play was to set that up was a big pass play from Anthony to senior Gavin Mendenhall, who's really been a nice addition, a nice compliment to Hatfield here of late. So you're tied at 8 and you're going to overtime, and Matt, as you mentioned, Austin Harris stepping in, hits Pierce Mowry on the TD. Darby Pillow adds that PAT, and then Paint Valley had their chance to match and just unable to do so. It, you know, throughout the night, I guess, you know, people had really talked offense, and I guess the two units that were kind of speaking loud and clear, telling us to, you know, hang on a minute. They remember us, we're the top two defenses in the league entering play. Zane Trace averaging 8.2 allowed, and Paint Valley just 9.4. So the 8-8 tied at regulation, Matt. I guess obviously the weather had a lot to do with that, but nonetheless, two great defenses duking it out in championship football.
Yeah, I think that I really think had the weather been good, the offense still would have, you know, I think those defenses are good enough where you're not going to see a 40-38 battle. But I do think you would have seen a game probably in the high teens, low 20s at least, because I think the offenses are that good too. But like you said, the weather kind of obviously helped the defense the other night for both teams. And I think that's something maybe that's been overlooked about both these teams. Take Zane Trace, for instance. I know they've pitched a couple shutouts, I think, in league play. You know, it's easy to talk about their offense when they put up 60 points or 40 some points and they have the weapons they have. But this defense, and I heard their coach Hall talking about their defense the other night. The defense is really sort of underrated a little bit and maybe not talked about as much as it should be. Obviously, that side of the ball has played really well for them.
Well, it certainly has, and I guess, you know, you look forward now. Obviously, Zane Trace is in the driver's seat. As we've learned in years past, there's certainly work to do. An undefeated Edina team comes calling now, and you know, we know that Piketon on a given night's capable. There's some other teams out there as well. So a lot of work to do, but nonetheless, everything they've wanted out of the 2015 campaign, Matt, would be right in front of them, a chance to run the table, which would not only be the gold ball, the undefeated season, but a chance to really maybe find themselves in a favorable Week 11 matchup hosting. And you know, as for Paint Valley, still a lot in front of them. Obviously, they'll try to see if Zane Trace will slip up. They'll try to run the table themselves. yeah, we'll see what 9-1, 8-2 do for them. They certainly have a couple really impressive non-league wins. So Matt, just your thoughts as we enter these last 3 to 4 weeks. Obviously, Zane Trace's number one goal is one game at a time to take care of the SVC title, and everything else will take care of themselves. But just your thoughts maybe on what we're going to see from these two really, really good football teams the rest of the way out.
Well, I think for Paint Valley, I mean, obviously we knew the winner of this game, you know, was far and away in the driver's seat for the league championship. Now, like you said, we have seen in years past where it looked like it was a done deal and then somebody would step up and pull the upset, so to speak, you know, or get that unexpected victory, which sort of threw the league race into a frenzy. So Zane Trace obviously has to guard against that. They're going to play a good Edina team, you know, Friday, who we know can run the football and control time of possession and things like that. So that defense we just talked about with Zane Trace going to be put to the test a little bit. And we know, like you said, we know anytime you play a Piketon team, there's some, you know, when they're a threat to score some points and keep themselves in a game. So Zane Trace has to guard against what's happened the last couple of years to some other teams, which is it looked like you could see the finish line and all of a sudden you trip up a little bit. Paint Valley, on the other hand, you know, anytime you're in a situation with 4 weeks left where you can't win the league championship without help from others, that's never a good situation. But they've got a lot to play for right now. They've got they've still got obviously playoffs ahead. In my opinion, I think they'll finish this thing out and put themselves hopefully in a home game playoff situation. Anybody that's been to a game out of Paint Valley knows the environment's incredible. Sure. If they can put themselves in a home playoff game, I think that's huge for them. I think they have a great opportunity to win and get to the second round. So still a lot to play for. I'm sure Coach Holland, you know, will rally his troops again, because all is not lost. You know, you lost a tough game against a good team. You know, you move forward now and start focusing on what you have to do to set yourself up for postseason success.
Well, it does, and the all the opportunity certainly there. The SVC obviously had some games that they probably weren't going to win in the non-league. Just talking some high school football the other day with some SVC people, and I thought the best point I had heard was Waverly. You know, because if you look at the Uniota and the Piketon losses to Waverly, I believe they were 8-7 and 16-13. Those are probably maybe some computer points that the league left on the table there a little bit. But nonetheless, plenty of opportunity for those two teams, and maybe even a third one. We'll just have to wait and see moving forward. Well, it's certainly a good recap. Looking forward to the rest of the way out. But, you know, Matt, if I really look at last week's discussion the most, I have to look at the discussion on coaching as it started some interesting talk. Up next, we look at the inconsistencies that show why, if you want a job where 100% approval is possible, coaching may not be for you. Well, Matt, I looked at a parent survey that I put together. It's something I've been trying to do. I mentioned a couple different things that I'd asked in the past couple weeks. This particular week, I'd reached out to 50 parents, the contacts that I had, trying to cover all 8 schools, trying to cover a variety of sports. I had 41 get back to me. Appreciate that's a pretty good turnaround for I apologize getting out a little bit late later in the week, but 41 people getting back, and I basically was asking the questions that you were asking last week, Matt. Do you want coaches offering off-season stuff? Do you want more of it? Camps, open gyms, etc. No matter what the sport may be. And basically, I had 29 people on the yes side say somewhat, but I thought what was interesting, I believe it was 20 of them followed up with not too much. So yes, but not too much. And then 12 just simply said no. Some of the popular responses I tried to keep track of. One said, we don't need it. Others said, I get one interesting one says, you know, it depends on the sport. Certain sports call for certain repetition, certain team activities. But a lot of people said family time, vacations, things like that. It's impossible to get to all of them. So I just thought that was some interesting feedback. And the contradiction, I guess, is what we're talking about, Matt. It really is a situation where at the end of the day, this is just kind of how I approach it. And tell me if I'm wrong or if you have a different philosophy, because you've obviously been extremely successful at what you do. I think I try to approach it with great work ethic. I try to do it with an open mind, but I try to do it, you know, the right way in terms of working real hard at it. And at the end of the day, you're going to have some groups over a 20-year career really buy in, some that maybe fight you a little bit on it, and then a lot in the middle. But at the end of the day, you're trying to balance being successful and really running a program the right way with obviously understanding that it may not be the most important thing in the lives of everybody you come in contact with.
Yeah, I think the first thing you have to do, in my opinion, as a coach, is you really have to figure out what is necessary for your success. In other words, what amount of time is just the minimum we have to put in? You know, we just can't do less than this and be successful. Now, what is that for your program? Is that saying basketball? Is that making sure you use all 10 of your days? Is that weightlifting 5 days a week? For me, we try to come up with 2 or 3 days a week maximum, you know, in the off season. And when I say 2 or 3 days, that doesn't mean that every kid has to be there every day. You know, we want to offer these days. We want to use our 10 days that we're allowed to use. But we want kids to understand, here's our calendar. You know, we're going to treat you like adults and we want you to act like adults. So in other words, if you can be here, we want you to be here. You should be here for most of this stuff. But we understand that families take vacations. We understand that every now and then you may have something else you want to do or you need to do. We're not going to get bent out of shape if so-and-so misses an open gym one night because he and his family wanted to go out to dinner. Okay? If it's every single time, well, yeah, that's maybe, you know what I mean? Maybe they're not meeting us in the middle. I think as coaches, you know, we need to understand families need their time, especially in the off season, because let's face it, once the season starts, there's not a lot of time. And we can't, you know, you can't have the, you know, oh, you want to miss practice tonight to go out to eat? Go ahead. Once the season starts, we can't do that. You know, it's got to be every day. And so I think coaches have to understand and give families, you know, a little bit of time in the off season. The other thing, not to make my answer too long here, but the other thing that needs to happen is, and I've said this before, coaches within a school have to work together. If you really want, you know, to make it easier on your athletes, you know, the basketball coach and football coach need to work together. You know, when's your weightlifting? Well, it's Tuesday morning from 8 to 10. Well, maybe I'll have my open gym from 10 to 12. Then that way, if a kid has to be there for both, he doesn't have to go home and come back. It's just all that morning, he knocks it all out. You know, coordinate your schedules a little bit.
Well, yeah, Matt, I had a couple interesting conversations, but there were just two comments that jumped out to me over the others this week. The first one comes across somewhat negative, but the message in the email has some worthy discussion points.
It is impossible to play 3 sports in today's high school landscape unless you are simply good enough to show up on the first day of practice and play at least 2 of the 3 sports. There are way too many off-season overlaps, and no matter how hard you try, you are going to make 1 or 2 of your coaches mad. Thanks for taking my comment.
Well, I thought if you uncover some of the messages in the email, I thought there was a few valid points. Now, I don't know that I agree with all of the wording. I mean, the whole thing of making coaches mad and different things like that. I mean, there's a difference between a coach being so mad that, like, you know, you're in the doghouse compared to, like you said, Matt, man, I'd really like to have so-and-so here tonight. That's unfortunate. Or, you know, it's. But the part I wanted to really touch on, I guess the reason I selected this as one of the two that I wanted to put on the show, was talking about being good enough to simply show up on the first day of practice and play. Now, unfortunately, there's some truth to this in certain scenarios, and I hate to say that as a coach, but again, it's my job to be honest. And I guess where I agree with it, Matt, is – if and I guess I've touched on this a little bit in weeks past, if you play in a really, really good program, so if you're at a school where the competition within is really high, the good news is you're getting an opportunity to play on really good teams. You're getting a chance to play in front of great atmospheres. You're going to play in big games. You're going to get a chance to maybe compete for championships. You're going to get a chance to make tournament runs and be a part of some of those really special teams that, you know, let's face it, we honor 20 years from now and we bring back at those respective schools. Now, the negative side of that probably goes across the sports, the competition within. This is the part that I've mentioned in weeks past, I guess, is maybe this is why the email jumped out at me, is if you are that elite volleyball player or that elite football player, and you are unable to go to some fall open gyms and so forth, it's not that the coach is holding that against you. It's just the fact that, as we've said on past shows, there are other people getting better playing basketball 3, 4, 5 nights a week. And that can kind of, you know, again, will you be good enough to jump right in, put the basketball in your hand and go? Some cases, yes. But there's other cases where there's probably a little bit of drop off in talent. So I guess in short, Matt, it is the good news is, again, you're playing on those good teams and the good programs, but the bad news might be that competition within. Whereas at other schools, yeah, you probably can jump one sport to the next and be one of the elite athletes in the school to the point where you can play, but you may just not get the opportunity to be on some successful teams and get some of those other benefits. Do you kind of agree with my line of thinking there? Is there something that I'm missing from this email that needs to be talked about?
Well, no, I understand where the email's coming from. Obviously, it's not impossible to play 3 sports because we have a bunch of kids that still do it. It's not as common as it used to be, maybe, or that I would personally still like it to be. But there's still a lot of 3-sport athletes. And I think that the kids that could just jump in and play on the first day, there are kids like that. It's rare. It's a very small percentage, but there are some kids with just so much God-given ability that, you know, if we're being honest, they don't have to work as hard as other kids to be better.
Right.
You know, that's just life. I mean, there's a lot of people that are just smarter than, you know, than somebody else. And it's not like they,
I have a lot of students in class that don't listen as well or study as hard that make better grades than the person sitting next to them.
That's just life. But I think in terms of the 3-sport athletes, I still think there's a lot of time management that goes into it. I think that, let's face it, if you know, when you go watch a basketball, volleyball, football, at the end of the day, the best players usually play. And, a coach doesn't usually pull the attendance sheet out in the middle of the third quarter if he needs somebody to go into a game and check, hey, let's see where they were at in June. You know, I mean, if you're good enough to play, you're going to play. For some kids, maybe showing up every day can get them over that hump and get them to a point where they can play a role. I see that. But most of it's still a time management thing. I think it's a communication thing. I've got a young man that comes to mind. I'm not going to name his name on the show. This is a 3-sport athlete. You're talking about a kid who plays 3 sports. You're talking about a kid who's, you know, Buckeye Boy State, goes to leadership conferences in the summertime. I mean, just busy, busy, busy. And the one thing about him, though, he always shoots you a text, gives you a call. Hey, these are the days I can be there, coach. I'm sorry I can't be there this day. I have this. So at least he's communicating. You're not wondering where he's at. You know, I wonder sometimes if some of these kids, you know, if the communication lines were open between player and coach a little bit more, if that wouldn't – you understand what I'm saying, Shane? Ease the pain a little bit.
No, there's no doubt about it. And I guess the point that I would kind of like to say to that leads us into the second email. So let's look at this second comment from this week's feedback, which tells coaches not to be lazy in the off season.
To win in today's high school sports, I think it's important to have a loaded summer in terms of opportunities to get better. It is the responsibility of the players to take advantage of these chances. I hate seeing coaches take a lazy approach in off season. Thanks for the show. I listen every Tuesday afternoon. Very cool how you guys cover all SVC sports.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. And, you know, Matt, this has nothing to do with this, but on that note of all SBC sports, was told that they made it official here recently that wrestling will go to a full SBC schedule this winter. So that'll be something to follow. But in returning to this comment, I wanted to kind of touch base on where you'd left off on the last one, Matt. When I started, you know, listening to them talk about coaches being lazy and so forth, I think, as we said last week, all coaches don't mind that because I think we demand it out of ourselves. So I don't mind that comment. I don't take any offense to that at all. But what I would say, and I think this is where you're going on this last question, is it is a little bit of a two-way street. It is a situation where I don't think it's people missing because they're going on a family vacation. I think it's when, you know, they're playing two or three things against one another and using it as a chance for them to be lazy. Yeah, I think of the two-sport athlete during the same season, which is very difficult to do. You know, it's one of those things. Are you telling the softball coach that you're at track and telling the track coach that you're at softball and you're not really doing either one? You see what I'm saying? It's one of those things to where
the
two-way commitment of what you're saying is, I know there's a lot of coaches that sit in an open gym of two and three people all the time. It's one of those things that are the kids and the families taking advantage of the opportunities that are being thrown out there to get into the weight room or to get involved in some of these activities. So that's a little bit of what you were saying there in that last question, Matt. It's one thing to say that coaches can't be lazy, but it really is a two-way street in the most successful programs.
Well, and I think everybody has to define, like I said, for their own program, what is – this emailer used the term loaded summer in terms of opportunities. Well, how much is enough? How much is too much? There's still some debate on that, you know. If I only offer open gyms 2 days a week, is that lazy? Or am I supposed to be offering them 5 days a week? You see what I'm saying? Who decides really what's enough? And I think some coaches, and I'm a believer in this, I think we want to offer opportunity, but at the same time, we don't want to burn kids out. That's that fine line, you know. And you know, if you can look at your players and say, hey, listen, we're going to do this, this, and this. You know, we're going to expect you you know, like I tell my basketball guys, you know, out of an entire summer, you know, you're looking at making a commitment of maybe 25, 30 days. You know, if you're coming to a couple open gyms a week and you come to our, you know, 10 days of our team stuff. And again, are we going to hit the panic button if you can't be there one time? No. So you're giving opportunities, but you're not being so demanding that kids like, man, this stinks. I don't even want to play, you know, because if you're not careful, what happens is everybody has their gym rats, so to speak, that want to be there every day. And those players are obviously important. A lot of times they're your best players. But you, to have a good team, you need those role players too. And sometimes those role players like playing. They like that sport, but they don't love it to the point where they want to be there every day. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
So, and if you turn those kids off, then what you're left with is a team of two or three gym rats and just trying to fill out the roster with kids that can't play a lick. You need those role players who, I like football. I like basketball, but I don't want to commit, you know, 5 days a week all season long to it. Well, do you just say, well, then forget it then. We don't want you. Well, if you do that, you're losing a lot of valuable kids. I don't think that's the answer. So it's a fine line.
Well, and it goes back. I hate to go back to this point, but it does kind of go back to the type of school or program you're at. I think if you're at a little bit of a bigger school where the numbers are a little bit higher, you probably, it kind of goes back to that business term of monopoly. You know, you can go back and maybe you can be a little bit more demanding. But what I found at the smaller school is a lot of times the way I've been able to adjust my rules is starting to look at, okay, here's what a junior high commitment is. Here's what a JV commitment is. Here's what a varsity commitment is. That way you're starting to find a little bit more of those levels and terms of, and I'm even talking there in season, you know, not only the off season stuff. So I think that's interesting. You know, Matt, as I look at this before I move on, that's some pretty good feedback this week. I mean, anything that comes to mind that as we take this conversation back and forth that you would like to see the fans still respond to, or maybe even some players respond to? Where do you feel like this conversation goes from here?
You know, I don't know. I to be honest, I mean, I don't know that I can answer that question. I think the listeners to this show, you know, really drive it like we talked about. We want it to be that way. You know, we want their input, their feedback, their input. And I think it, as we get emails coming in, I'm sure the direction will sort of take shape a little bit.
Sure.
I think when you talk about coaching responsibilities and what makes a good coach, and, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had an emailer send in like 20 things he thought made a good coach. Well, obviously, if you've got 20 things and other people probably have two or three things here and there, good coaches aren't easy to find. You know, how many people can really live up to that standard? So, you know, it's you know, one thing we might look at, and you and I've talked about this a little bit before in private, what's the responsibility of the school, you know, if you have good coaches, to try to keep those people? And try to, you know, if you've got a coach in place that has built a program and does a good job, what do you do to try to keep him or her, you know, as a school? What's the school's responsibility? You know, and we've seen examples of some schools go out of their way to try to keep coaches for a long period of time. And we've seen some coaches cut them loose, and a lot of times controversially. So, you know, maybe that's an angle we can talk about. But I think ultimately, you know, it's not – we're in that comfortable position where we kind of let the emails roll in and then the listeners sort of drive the topics.
Right, and when they do an outstanding job of doing just that, again, the inbox is admin1@sbcsportzone.com. And, you know, Matt, as I transition to this next section, it makes sense to have it brought to the fans by Crown Hill Golf Club as we start to talk SVC golf in the postseason. Fans, Crown Hill Golf Club, phone number 740-986-4653. They still have some really, really good deals as the weather, I know, is kind of getting a little inconsistent here, but you still have some golf to play. You can check them out on golfnow.com, but a beautiful place up there in the fall. Get you a few more rounds in before the weather turns on us for good. Well, you know, Matt, when I talk golf, you know, maybe sometimes we don't give SVC golf its due in terms of throughout Southern Ohio. In this particular year, boy, have we had a good showing. SVC golf in the sectional round, Uniota and Piketon able to split as Uniota stays here at home at JC's. Piketon goes down to Shawnee. They both capture sectional championships. And then in the Division III, you have Southeastern and Dena advance. And then individuals from Paint Valley, two from Huntington, two from Zane Trace. So five total play on. So I believe if you look at it, Matt, as five from each school, you basically have 25 different SVC players going to the district level. And I should also mention on the ladies' side, the Westfall girls, they move on, and then Huntington's Kelsey McDonald. So even there on the ladies' side, playing some pretty good golf. I guess just those particular statistics just kind of really opened my eyes to just how good the golf league was this year. And I guess we did talk about that early, Matt, but probably need to give the league some praise here in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising. You know, obviously, one, there's a lot of talent in this league. I mean, we've talked about that a lot on this show this year. I think, you know, so the fact that it's talented, you're going to have kids get out. But the other thing I think is when you're used to having to compete at a high level every single time out, don't you think that kind of prepares you a little bit for that tournament mentality? I mean, you know, you're not just going to stroll out there in an SVC league match and, I'll just show up and kind of see what happens today, because you're going to get your butt kicked because there's too many good players and good teams. So you've got to show up every day really focused, really ready to go. And I think that almost prepares you for tournament action.
Well, it does. And I understand that as they move forward, maybe they're moving to some courses they're not as familiar with or whatnot. But really have to believe that Uniota and Piketon capable of going on just about any track and playing with anybody. So they'll be exciting to watch them. And then even a couple of these individuals, they've shown if they can get hot and play well on a given day. So definitely something to follow. Well, fans, I'll tell you what, stay with us. Up next, we talk volleyball. We just had a wild week in the SVC, and this week is sure to be more of the same. Well, Matt, coming up in SVC volleyball, it's kind of the showdown that's going to let us know what to expect from here. As Uniota and Edina get together, and both are 16-2. Edina 10-0 in the SVC. Uniota 8-2. And I tell you, it's I guess it's a time where people around the league, especially if you're there at Huntington, you're going to start to turn a Uniota fan, if you will. Obviously, those schools are going to have some help here to stay in it. You'd have to think if Edina gets it to 11-0 at this point, that would be Uniota's third loss. Huntington would still have to go to Westfall. Still some other matches there before they end up hosting Edina to end the season. But obviously, this is kind of an now or never in terms of Uniota. And I guess as a side note, Huntington, just your thoughts, Matt, as you enter a game where you have that helpless feeling, where maybe if you're Huntington, where you don't control your own destiny, but at the same time, if you're Edina, you this is what you play for. You have the opportunity to play right here at home, and I don't want to say win the league, but let's face it, it kind of would certainly give you a stranglehold on it.
Well, there's no question. I mean, it's going to be awfully difficult. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago when I believe right before Edina and Huntington played, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
And we talked about how, you know, if Edina, you know, got through that game unbeaten, it was going to be awfully tough for them to at least not get a piece of the league title in some form or fashion, because as consistent as they are, for them to, you know, get beat a couple times, for them to have to get beat two times in the second round of the league plays, you know, just doesn't seem likely. But we'll see. I mean, Uniota, you know, they get their crack Tuesday night. Obviously, if they certainly have the type of team that's athletic enough to go get it done. If they do, then it makes this league race a lot more interesting. If they don't, you know, I hate to say it, but I think it's all but over. I just don't see Edina, you know, if they win against Uniota, I don't see them falling apart to that extent to not be the champion.
Well, it's certainly an interesting matchup, because obviously the staple of Edina is how well they defend and how well they pick out your weaknesses and attack you. And as we said, I think it was even last week or 2 weeks ago, they just simply don't mess up. You know, they're one that fundamentally they don't beat themselves. And, you know, Uniota is a team that they're certainly still trying to find themselves a little bit. They've had the inconsistencies that you see with good, young, talented teams, but nonetheless capable. They too are so long and athletic that a lot of times they're able to keep the balls alive that a lot of teams cannot. A lot of teams will have hit the floor. So should be some long volleys. I know the first time around, very, very competitive. Expect more of the same, and that'll be fun to watch. But, you know, Matt, the other sidebar that kind of took off this past week was with Huntington beating Uniota, was the player of the year race. Huntington kind of got wrapped up in 2-5 set thrillers. One, I guess, we more expected with Uniota, and then another with Zane Trace, which maybe we didn't expect as much. But nonetheless, the story of the week was Delana Gregg, as she is just running away. It's not even close on the girls' side with our Herbie Strange. State Farm Insurance Athlete of the Week. So I'll get that up midweek here, as again, we always try to take that about 3-4 days out to be fair to our weekend people. I know I haven't talked much about that, Matt, this year, but the reason I've been posting that more midweek, actually the voting will stop right around that Monday, Tuesday usually, but I want to be fair to say you have a cross-country kid or a kid do something on a Saturday. I always try to give a little window to be fair on the vote there. So Delana Gregg, 38 kills in the win against Uniota, follows that up with 34 kills against Zane Trace. She goes over the 1,000th career mark in her career, so congratulations to Delana. And Matt, I guess what this had stir up is a lot of the POI talk. The one email was nominating Delana for Player of the Week. As I said earlier, just about every email that came across was doing that, but said probably for Player of the Year as well. Well, you could tell that that young lady really wanted to win. Had another one came in, and all it said, Matt, was POI race just got interesting. That came in after in terms of SVC volleyball. So obviously Delana putting herself as a senior on the map, having her team in a position to still compete for a title. Huntington sitting at 15-3 right now, 8-2 in the league. But then I had some other feedback, Matt, that I thought is what made the discussion interesting. Another one says, why is Devin Putnam all of a sudden getting punished for winning SVC matches in straight sets? And I guess if I read between the lines there, it's a fair point of they're saying that when you play a 5-set match, the statistics are going to get skewed is way unfair, because obviously in a 5-setter, you want your big time players to step up, and Delana certainly did that. But do you understand where they're coming there, Matt? That's why really on our Dean of Sports Medicine page, we always try to do these stats in terms of average per set played, because I do think a lot of times in terms of the total number, it can be a little bit misleading. But probably a fair point, isn't it, in terms of a lot of times when you're that best player on the best team, you kind of sometimes can get just looked at as, all Adina won again tonight, Putnam was solid. is that fair?
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, I don't know that the stat thing, I don't buy that, because the stats are always done by sets played, you know, as an average. I mean, I know somebody could say so-and-so had 38 kills or something tonight, but ultimately when you really look at our stat page, for instance, and you really look at the breakdown, you're doing it by average, you know. So really, regardless of if you're a good team that wins all your games and you know, all your matches in three sets, you know, I don't know. It's still an average. Now, do I think that sometimes it's a little bit harder to maybe shine when you've got a lot of good people around you individually? Yeah, maybe. It's that old thing, you know, this Player of the Year is always an interesting debate, because let's say Adina runs the table, which is there's certainly a chance of that. You know, obviously Union and Huntington want to have something to say about that, but let's just say for the sake of argument they do. In a league like this, you go 14-0, you could certainly make an argument why the Player of the Year should come from that team. But at the same time, sometimes, and we've all had these teams, and they're actually great teams to coach, you don't really have you are so good across the board, maybe you don't have just one kid. Sure. You know, maybe it's just such a team effort and so balanced, and that allows maybe a kid from another team that didn't win the league, who put up some, you know, gaudier numbers or whatever, to step in there. That's the age-old argument. Does the Player of the Year have to come from the league champion? You know, so it'll be interesting. You know, ultimately the coaches will sort of shake it out in a vote, and you know, who knows? We've seen it go both ways in the SVC, have we not? We've seen players from league champions that you thought maybe they weren't the best player, but we also have seen good players from teams that didn't win the league win the award. So,
well, and we have, and you look at these teams, it kind of goes along with what you're saying. Obviously, the Carroll girl from Adina is pretty much a lock as far as I'm concerned at this point. I haven't really seen anyone defensively in terms of defensive play going to take that award for her. I think a lot of these people that have been passing are glad to see Elena Lytle graduate, so it kind of opens the award back up. So along the same line, I guess I'll go ahead and throw it in since I have just a second here. Even a Westfall fan was saying, is Hannah Phillips still in the race? What does the team need to do? That's a hard thing to answer. Again, Phillips, as I've said before, is quite a player. She, by the way, was a Herbie Strange Athlete of the Week last week, but she's a talented kid. I've been on record a couple times saying that she's probably the kid that can impact it. If we're just talking individual, she's probably a kid that can impact the match in the most ways. So, as you said, Matt, we've had this discussion in multiple sports forever, and we continue. I guess what the positive of the discussion is it gives us a chance to highlight great players in a great league. And I guess right now we're looking at maybe the best player on the best team, the kid having the best year, and then maybe just the most talented player. And I guess that's a discussion you could have just about – we'll probably be having it in basketball and boys and girls. We'll probably have it in baseball, softball, whatever, just because it's a pretty common discussion. But nonetheless, it's one that's interesting. And you know, it's kind of a way to highlight all the kids in the year they're having. Just any closing thoughts before we get into the closing part of our show here on be it player of the year or the volleyball race in general?
You know, the only thing I would say to piggyback on what you just talked about, when you know, it comes down to your definition a little bit of that award, I think. You know, sure. Is player of the year in your mind the best player? Is it the most valuable player? You know, sometimes those aren't the same thing. You know, sometimes there's just a kid who's really talented and really good and just stands a little bit above everybody else. But you could also make the argument that a girl, let's say, on a team that wins the league, it was so valuable to that team that without her, maybe they don't accomplish that ultimate goal, you know? So it's that most valuable versus most outstanding, you know? And, again, everybody has to have their own definition. That's what makes that a little bit interesting come voting time. And, you know, we'll see how it shakes out.
Well, fans, you can get involved, Twitter, Facebook, let us know in the inbox, admin1@svcsportzone.com. And you know, Matt, as I get to the closing of the show here, we'll have it brought to the fans once again by the Crown Hill Golf Club. And we always look at what's next. And fans, again, let me give you that number for Crown Hill. It's 740-986-4653. And, you know, Matt, the one thing that I had to move with – I was surprised with the different feedback that we were getting this week, and I had to move one more week. I'll keep moving it back and hopefully get an opening here for it. I'm just about finished up with my all-time volleyball team that a lot of people have asked me to do. And, you know, we did the basketball team a while back, and it was incredible feedback on that, a lot of fun. Now, with basketball, I was able to go back to about 1990 and be pretty intelligent about that. And I had a lot of people helping me before that. With volleyball, just didn't learn the game quite as early. I only feel comfortable for my team going back about 12 years, but I'd love to get some people's feedback. I know we've had some incredible athletes back into the 80s and 90s as well. But, Matt, I guess what I would ask you on that is – What do you look at? We just got done talking about player of the year within 1 year. I mean, wow, when you start separating, I'm trying to put together actual rotations, like actual teams on terms of how I would play them in a rotation. I'm trying to do a first team, second team. And I'll tell you, I'm down to all but a coin flip on a couple kids that maybe be an outside hitter or maybe be a passer, different things. Are there some things that separate in your mind? Just if you were being selfish for a minute and you're picking your own team, are there some things that are difference makers in your mind, be it team success, different things they were a part of, statistics? What would be the thing that maybe separates it when you think of looking back at any SVC sport and picking such an elite list?
Well, I think if you're going back that far and you're trying to narrow it to that extent, when you talk about the hundreds of players, you know what I mean, and you're sure trying to narrow it down to a certain – whatever number, you know, you're going to come up with. I think that yeah, it's got to be such a special player that most likely it was going to be somebody who led their team to a certain level of success. Now, maybe not a league championship, since the same team won most of those over a stretch. Okay. Right. But at least competing for it. I mean, I don't want to offend anybody, but if you're good enough as a player to get on a list like this, that involves 12 years of players, then you were probably good enough to lead your team, you know, to a better than fifth place finish. Okay. And I mean, you were probably good enough to sort of get your team at least into contention, or maybe have a little bit of tournament success or whatever. But now there could be an exception to that rule, because volleyball is a sport that's sort of hard to dominate. Wouldn't you agree? Individually, I mean, you have to have help. Even if you're a great hitter, you've got to have passers and setters. You know, it's sometimes.
Well, you see a lot of those middle of the pack teams too, that they just simply can't compete with the top half when that particular kid goes to the back row for three rotations.
Sure, and in basketball, for instance, it's not like that. If you're a really, really good basketball player, you can probably just go take the ball and keep your team in games most of the time. You know what I mean? In volleyball, you're at the mercy of needing help, and you know, so from that standpoint, maybe what I just said, you know, 30 seconds ago isn't completely true, but I still think that if you're
I agree with you a little bit. If you're that elite, you know, there's other things than just how you play. It's really just your impact on the program, you know, right. Coming up through your 8th, 9th, 10th grade year in terms of what you develop around you and the way you're the ambassador for a program. And I agree with you. I think there's some truth to that. So I would love to get some fan feedback on that. Again, what I'm going to be doing whenever we can fit it into the show, the fan feedback has been so incredible the last couple of weeks with some of these ongoing topics. I didn't want to cheat those, but certainly just about have those teams ready, and I want to get those out. You know, but Matt, before we get out of here this week, as I always do, anything else as you look back through the agenda, anything else that's been on your mind that we want to look at here in the upcoming week? Is really we're down to our last, we're going to extend fall season maybe a little bit, but we're probably down to our last handful of shows.
Yeah, you know, I think the coaching conversation, you know, we don't like to take a topic and just run it in the ground several weeks. But I do think the coaching thing, and because it's not just about coaching, we've also discussed the three-sport athlete and some of these things. I think that conversation probably has a little bit of life left in it from some different angles. You know, obviously, it's going to be interesting. You know, you've got some tournaments and stuff to talk about, but it's also going to be interesting to look at this football down the stretch. Especially for Zane Trace and Paint Valley, because, you know, the SVC hasn't had a ton of postseason success. And, you know, as the playoff picture starts to take shape, it's going to be interesting, I think, to look and see can any of these teams that make the playoffs, which at this point, you know, I don't know. I haven't looked at them closely enough. Obviously, Zane Trace and Paint Valley, barring some, you know, disaster, will probably be in the postseason. Is it going to set up to where the SVC can actually have a little bit of success in the postseason? So, you know, I'm sure again the listeners will drive it. They'll come up with something we're not even thinking of right now. But those are a couple things that jump to mind for me.
Well, again, fans, let me run down the ways to get involved. Obviously, Facebook, Twitter, a lot of you have been using this past weekend. I've had a lot of – you can also give me a message there if you're wanting to do something a little bit more private. You can also get a hold of us in the inbox. admin1@svcsportzone.com. Encourage you to keep following me on Shoutomatic. You can get those releases on Twitter as well. Or, as always, you can give us a call, 740-569-3254. Love to have your voice right here on SVC Sports Talk. I know, again, a lot of you seem more comfortable with the inbox. We'll continue to pick out some of our favorites and have Bruce put it on audio for us and continue to have you get involved in the show that way. So again, another great show. Looking forward to a great finish to fall. Best of luck to all of our golfers in the postseason, and as well as our other fall athletes as we go down the stretch here in the SVC races. So until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and DBK Media Services, and for Mac Holmes, this is Shane Holmes reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.